This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. On this segment of the program, we're doing a program on family law, but we're starting with a specific area. We're talking about people who might want to get married, or maybe they really do want to get married. We're going to be talking about community property, separate property, and prenuptial agreements, and whether or not one should get one. My guests are Jeremy Klein. He's chair of the this is a long description, but stay with us. Family Law Advisory Law Commission for the Board of Legal Specialization. And he's a partner in the Los Angeles law firm of Feinberg, Mindell, Brandt, and Klein in Los Angeles. My other guest is Yasmin Mehmet, who's been a guest of this program for several years, several times. She's a member of and the legislative chair of the executive committee of the family law section of the state bar. Her offices are in San Francisco. Funding for Your Legal Rights is made possible by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the state bar, which certifies 11 areas of specialty, not only family law, but appellate law, bankruptcy law, criminal law, estate planning, trust and probate law, family law, of course, franchise and distribution law, immigration and nationality law, taxation law, workers' compensation law, legal malpractice law, and admiralty and maritime law. Additional funding is provided by the Family Law Section of the State Bar and the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. Jeremy, are you there in Los Angeles?
I am here in Los Angeles.
You sound like you're actually right here with us. Very nice to have you here. And Yasmin, welcome back to the program.
Thank you very much, Chuck.
Very nice to have you here. I think what we should do is have you describe for us what really is a prenuptial agreement. Jeremy, you want to start with that?
Sure, Chuck. Thank you. It's an honor to be on your show.
Well, thank you very much. It's an honor to have you, actually.
Well, think of it this way. Everybody getting married in the state of California has a premarital agreement. It's called the California Family Code. But the family code, one size fits all, doesn't work for every couple. So a premarital agreement is a written contract between the couple that within certain areas allows them to define their rights and obligations to one another in a way that may be different than the standard California Family Code.
But it's usually done in terms of one or the other person trying to protect some assets, isn't it?
Often that is the case, but it doesn't have to be. There are some other reasons why people may want to do a premarital agreement, but protecting assets of some kind is certainly one of the most common reasons.
How do you, Jeremy and Yasmin, how do you deal with people who come into your office who are thinking of getting married and they say, gee, should I get a prenuptial agreement? Because I would think that that kind of a situation would take off the entire or some of the romance of the whole idea of getting married. How do you deal with someone like that, or what do you do to try to help them get over that hurdle?
That's definitely part of it. When people get married, some people think that having a premarital agreement may dampen the romance a little bit, and that's certainly true temporarily, but usually the people, they have a good reason. It's something that they've talked about. Oftentimes, another lawyer or a business manager or an accountant has recommended that they get a premarital agreement. So oftentimes, by the time they come into my office, they're already predisposed or interested in doing it.
Okay, so they've kind of made up their mind. How do you deal with this, Yasmin?
Yeah, I find a lot of people come in and they're a little bit reluctant about it because oftentimes in the circumstances that people come into your office, one or the other of them is more or less keen on getting this done. So they have a reason they want to do it, and the other party is brought along essentially to participate in it, although they may not be wanting to do that. In my view of it really has been that what it does is it gets parties who are going to be married to have a conversation that they might not otherwise have.
Mm-hmm.
So they will talk about, you know, what are their beliefs about risk? What are their beliefs about financial investing? What are their beliefs about whether they have a fundamental idea that they will be obligated to support one another in the future? So my view of it really has been that what it does is it creates a stronger foundation for a marriage because it has particularly young people talking about things that they might not otherwise talk about. It was in the glory and the romance of the beginning of a relationship. Talking about those things is mundane and it's practical, but I think it can be really useful and be creating a foundation for a marriage that will make it more solid.
I think most people who are familiar with prenuptial or marital agreements, premarital agreements, can remember the publicity that came up with Barry Bonds and his wife-to-be, or following their, actually following their getting married and having problems. But with a prenuptial agreement, can you do something such as eliminate the responsibility of one party for providing alimony to the other? Is that possible?
That is something that is possible, but there are certain requirements that must be met. And with that specific example, it's something that the court can review after if the marriage dissolves.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a number of reasons that people do prenuptial agreements, and it's not just the accumulation of wealth that has they've had prior to the marriage, but it can also be because somebody has accumulated debt, for example, and they're trying to protect their partner from
yes.
that premarital debt.
Yes.
Sometimes you have one party who has family wealth that they're trying to protect. The other thing that happens during marriage often is community property, essentially, is all property that is acquired during a marriage. So what people don't understand is you can also have community labor, which is another form of community property that can be divided between
community
the parties.
Community labor. Define that
community
for us.
Labor. So, for example, when I am working at my job or if I'm working on a house, that is community labor. And it is labor that both parties have the right to during a marriage. So those are the kinds of things that people can consider in prenuptial agreements because, for example, if you have one party who's working for a family business, that employment for a family business is community labor. So it does, people have to consider what the family law, what the family code would define as community and separate property, and think from there what it is that they want to, how they want to vary from that.
But let me throw this out to both of you, if I may. If someone has his or her own business and works in that business, once that person gets married to someone else, under the family law code, doesn't the earnings of that person become community property? Even though the business itself is separate property, but the actual month-to-month, year-to-year earnings are community property, are they not?
That can be a complicated question.
Well, good.
and this is quite frankly why oftentimes business owners may need a premarital agreement. You're correct that once you get married, your earnings are separate. Your earnings are community property. On the other hand, if you have, let's say, an asset, you have an investment, you have money in the bank, and it's just sitting there earning interest from before marriage, that money remains separate property. When you have a business owner, sometimes it can be mixed. You may have somebody who owns their own business and they're working in that business earning money, but how much of that income is really the return on investment that may look like separate property, and how much of that is the labor during the marriage that may look like community property? And it can be difficult and expensive to try and apportion that or to figure that out in a divorce. So in that situation, somebody would be a prime candidate for a premarital agreement to try and eliminate those gray areas.
Yeah, I think it's a classic answer of a lawyer that it depends upon the facts.
Sure.
Because it is a little bit more complex. It's
yeah.
more nuanced than simply defining it in one category or the other.
What if you have a couple where one of the prospective partners going to get married is not being fully upfront with his or her assets or interests or whatever it may be, financial interests? They enter into a prenuptial agreement for the protection of one or the other, or maybe the both. But it turns out that one of the parties has really hidden something. Maybe he or she has a lot of money over in the Seychelles Islands, or gosh knows where. And how do you deal with something like that? Or am I just asking something that's too bizarre?
No. One of the important parts of a premarital agreement is typically full disclosure. When people think of premarital agreements, you could boil it down at its most basics to what's mine is mine, what's yours is yours. So it's important that people identify what they have. And if they fail to disclose or if they misrepresent what's in their assets, that might, under certain circumstances, be grounds to set aside or challenge the agreement.
Mm-hmm.
So it's usually in somebody's best interest to make full disclosure.
Yeah, I absolutely agree.
If they're going through the trouble to do an agreement, they might as well do it right and make that full disclosure.
What can one expect? I think in terms of talking with both of you before we went on the air, certainly if a prenuptial agreement is appropriate for a prospective couple who's going to get married, it's really very significant that each of them have their own attorney. Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely.
It's essential.
Yeah, okay.
Also.
So if a prenuptial agreement is going to be prepared, and let's say we're not talking about someone who's a billionaire or worth hundreds of millions, but let's say comfortably off, maybe a middle-income kind of person who has a good job, he has a good job, she has a good job, etc. What does a prenuptial agreement, perhaps, what's the range of what something like that would cost? From the attorney's standpoint?
It can vary from couple to couple. Every couple is unique. Every couple has their own circumstances. But I would say probably in the range of plus or minus 5,000 to 7,500.
Really? What would you say there,
Jasmine? I'd say that's probably a reasonable estimate. I mean, keep in mind that with a prenuptial agreement, one party is drafting the agreement. So one counsel is drafting the agreement and the other is reviewing it.
I see.
So the number of drafts that will go back and forth will really depend upon the thoroughness of everybody in reviewing it.
Mm-hmm.
Some clients are more particular about language and various provisions, and they will have an idea of something they want, and as it gets fleshed out more, that idea can change.
Mm-hmm.
So I've seen some cases where we've only gone through a couple of drafts and others where we've had 30 drafts.
Really?
So
if
you have a complex financial situation, which is not the example that you gave, but it certainly can become much more complex.
Yes.
If people have significant assets or assets that are structured in such a way that the language is really important.
Jeremy, if someone or some persons who are listening to us and are thinking about getting married, I guess the divorce rate in our state is something like 50%, is it not? Something like that?
It's in that range.
So they're either getting married the first time, maybe the second time, maybe the third time. Who knows? Is there some good source for someone who's interested in this to start with to try to educate themselves? And I'm not talking about them doing their own prenuptial agreement. I'm not talking about a layperson doing it, but educating themselves. I mean, I've always been a great believer in the NOLO Press, it's now called NOLO.com books, which are the large paper books. But I am not aware that they have put a book together that contains anything about prenuptial agreements. I may be wrong, but I'm wondering, Jeremy, do you have any source that you would suggest to people to try to educate themselves?
And this may sound kind of strange, but one thought would be to actually read the portion of the family code that talks about premarital agreements. It's only a couple of pages long. Unfortunately, because most premarital agreements require that both sides have a lawyer, it is something that is hard for people to do themselves.
Yes.
They can talk about it. They can come up with all the deal points. But when it actually comes time to sign the agreement, they would be better off if each side had their own lawyer. So probably the best source of information would be to sit down and talk to a family law lawyer for an hour to review their particular situation, their finances, their circumstances, and see whether a premarital agreement would be appropriate and what terms to include in the agreement for their particular situation.
The code section you're talking about, that's two pages long, is the Family Code 1612.1612, is that correct?
Yeah, it's Family Code section 1610 through 1616.
1610 through 1616. And that's something that if one Googles the California Family Law Code, you can find that, can you not?
Yeah, you'll pop into either the legislature's code online or there's some of the commercial services have it online.
I always think it's good for people to do a little bit of homework before they go see a lawyer, if they can. And so I'm a real believer in the layperson educating him or herself. Here's a question for you that has come into the studio. What if a husband passes away with $100,000 in debt? Does his widow inherit that debt?
It depends on the circumstances. Whether it was community debt,
yes,
incurred during the marriage, or if possible.
Let's assume it occurred during the marriage. That the husband, let's say, was a spendthrift, and he ends up leaving his wife with $100,000 in debt. Is she responsible for that?
In most circumstances, if the debt was incurred during the marriage, then both spouses would be responsible.
So there we are.
It could have created some sort of contract, but I'm assuming from the scenario that that was not the case.
Now, what kind of a contract could they have created?
Well, if they had potentially some form of postnuptial agreement that had anticipated this, I don't want to say that it is necessarily possible, but it might be under the circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
So depending upon the estate, depending upon the circumstances in which this debt arose, there may be some ways to consider something in advance, not obviously if it has happened already.
So are you saying then after a couple is married, let's say they whether they do or don't have a prenuptial agreement before marriage, after they're married, is it possible then for them to enter into some kind of an agreement that, as you say, would be a postnuptial or postmarital agreement?
It is possible to enter into postnuptial agreements, but the validity of them is a little bit, it is not as solid as a prenuptial agreement, because at that point the parties are in a confidential relationship with one another, which means they have different fiduciary duties to one another. So they are not in the same position as two people before they go into marriage who are having an arm's length negotiation about the terms of a contract.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, they're married, and there's a presumption that you can unduly influence somebody that you're married with. And
there's a fiduciary duty from one to the other and vice versa.
Right, right, exactly.
Whereas prior to marriage, there is not.
There's the ability to not enter into the marriage if that's the case. But it's obviously the dynamics are fairly different once people are in a marriage and the law recognizes that.
Jeremy, you and Yasmin are certified specialists in family law. What is a certified specialist? And then I also know you want to tell at least the lawyers listening to the program when the next certified specialist exam is going to be. So would you cover that at this point, if you would, briefly?
Sure. The State Bar certifies 11 areas for legal specialization, which you read at the top of the program. And the State Bar gives a test once every 2 years. This year, the test will be given on October 22nd, 2013, and the time to register is by September 10th. So if any of the lawyers listening practice in any of those 11 areas, including our personal favorite, family law, they should consider sitting for the legal specialization exam. Legal specialization is open to lawyers who've been practicing at least 5 years. They have to take and pass this test, and then each specialty has a series of experience requirements that the lawyers have practiced in the area and have completed certain tasks before they're certified by the state bar.
Okay, all right. And so the exam will be on October 22nd. Is it a one-day exam?
It's a one-day exam. It's a exam given to lawyers who are practicing in the field. So it's a little bit different than the regular bar exam that people take to become a lawyer. Mm-hmm. This exam is focused exclusively on each area of specialty.
All right. Let me let the listeners know. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're doing a program focusing initially on people interested in getting married. There are issues involving community property, separate property, and we're focusing on whether or not it's appropriate for someone to enter into a prenuptial agreement with their prospective spouse, or it's also referred to as a premarital agreement. My guests are Yasmin Mehmet, a member and legislative chair of the executive committee of the family law section of the state bar. My other guest is Jeremy Klein, chair of the Commission on Family Law of the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. Jeremy's office is in Los Angeles, and Yasmin is in San Francisco. For those of you who are listening to us live, we will take some calls in the second half hour, and I'll give you the number in just a few minutes. And whether you're listening in, let's say, in the Bay Area, or if you're listening on the Internet at www.klw.org, you'll be able to call in and ask a question, make a comment, etc. What are the things that are against public policy that you cannot include, let's say, that the court will not honor if you try to include it in a prenuptial agreement?
Well, there are quite a number of those. Probably one of the most common that people want to have is a provision which ensures that their partner-to-be will be faithful to them. And that is something that is not supported by public policy. You can't offer to pay for companionship of a party, because that is something that's assumed to be part of a marital relationship.
I'm sorry, you can't offer to pay for companionship. What do you mean by that?
So that you can't say that in... As consideration for the marriage, you don't need consideration for this type of contract, but I will pay you $50,000 for each year that you will be my companion. And that's something that is contrary to public policy, because it is assumed that that's something that will be a part of a marriage.
Sure. How interesting.
Another thing that you can't do is limit future child support. If there are mm-hmm. children of the marriage, you cannot, in a premarital agreement, limit the right to receive child support.
Yeah, and on that front also, child custody, you can't eliminate the court's jurisdiction to make decisions about custody. So while people may say this is how we would like to have our children be cared for, later on the court still has the ability to make those decisions those issues.
If they entered into a prenuptial agreement saying that should we separate, should we split, should we get divorced, the custody of the child will be with the mother, that's not something that will be upheld.
That's right. If the father comes in later on and says that this is not in the best interest of the children, then the court will have the jurisdiction to be able to address that, even though they have put it in the contract. They also can't vary from the no-fault dissolution in California.
So uh-huh.
It's no fault.
In other words, say if you do this, that's the only way we're going to get divorced. You can't do that.
That's right.
All right.
That's right. Court, if one party wants a divorce, it will be granted, and they don't need to be able to establish any kind of fault grounds. You also can't have any provisions that are promotive of divorce. Mm-hmm. And that will be, for example, if one party will say, if you divorce me, you have to pay me $500,000. And in that circumstance, it keeps one party theoretically in the marriage, but there is a promotion for the other party that gets a bonus on the dissolution of the marriage.
Yes. Okay.
So those are all against public policy.
Anything else, Jeremy, you want to throw in?
No, those are the major topics. Anything else that's against public policy, but it really focuses on trying to limit child support or custody and anything that smacks of fault.
All right. Let me just mention this for those of you who are interested in perhaps getting pamphlets from the Board of Legal Specialization in any one or more of the 11 specialties. You can either call the statewide number of the Board of Legal Specialization and ask for this. It's 415-538-2100, 415-538-2100. Or you can go to the website, which is californiaspecialist.org. It's all one word, California Specialist. That's singular, by the way, californiaspecialist.org. There are all 11 specialties have a pamphlet. And you can also, by going to either calling the phone number or going to the website, you can also find out who the certified specialists are in your geographic area. So you would plug in where you are and it would, and what field of law you're being concerned with, you have a problem with, and it would tell you who the certified specialists are. How do you deal, Jeremy, initially, and we have about 1 minute left in the statewide version of the program, and then we'll go into the second half hour, which will just be local and on the internet at www.klw.org. But how do you deal with... let's say someone wanting to come and see you and ask some questions. Is there, I know in bankruptcy, because I, you know, the Board of Legal Specialization is the major funder of this program. I know that many of the bankruptcy attorneys for an initial consultation, let's say half an hour, maybe even an hour, will do it without a charge. How do most certified specialists in family law deal with that, if at all?
Each lawyer is a little different. If it's regarding a premarital agreement, what I like to do is have the client come in. I'll meet with them for an hour or two and charge them a flat fee for an initial consultation.
Mm-hmm.
And that way we can really get in depth into what their particular situation is to determine, do they need a premarital agreement and what the terms of that agreement may be. That's not something that you can necessarily do in a 10-minute phone call.
I would think
not. I
really
like to meet the people face-to-face and really get a sense of what this couple is about and what their needs are.
Briefly, if you would, 20 seconds or so, Yasmin, how do you deal with it?
Yeah, I also charge for the consultations. I don't think I know any other specialists that don't do that because you go through a lot of tactics and strategy in that time period. So you really want to make sure that people are listening to what you're saying, understanding what you're saying, and that you're getting a good sense of, as Jeremy said, what their needs and goals are.
All right. It is 728 at 91.7, your local public radio station, KLW in San Francisco. This is Your Legal Rights. This is now, if you have some questions in the area of family law, not just premarital agreements or prenuptial agreements, but other areas of family law, please don't hesitate to call in. The number is 1-415-841-4134. 415-841-4134. I know that in doing this program, I've been doing it now for a little bit over 29 years, and I know at times it's very difficult for people to call in and ask questions if there are problems with your spouse. So I do suggest that if you feel timid about this, you can call and talk with Martin, who answers the phone. Give him, if you prefer not to have your voice on the air, give him a brief statement of what your question is, your comment is. I would much prefer to have you on the air. You can give a name that is not your own so that you don't necessarily reveal who you are to your spouse if that's what you're concerned about. So join us at 1-415-841-4134. We're talking about, we started talking about community property, separate property, and the need, if need be, for prenuptial or premarital agreements. My guests are Jeremy Klein. He's the chair of the Commission on Family Law of the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. His offices are in Los Angeles. My other guest is Yasmin Mehmet, a member of and the legislative chair of the Executive Committee of the Family Law Section of the State Bar. Her offices are in San Francisco. And so I'd like to start with, it looks like Kaylin. Kaylin, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Hi.
Hi. So first of all, I wanted to say thank you so much for providing this service and your time. It's a great, wonderful community service and resource. My question is actually more family law. My husband and I have a 10-month-old son, and neither, we're in our early 30s, so of course we think, you know, nothing bad.
Kaylin, slow down. Yeah. Slow down.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, okay. Just slow down just a little bit, but go ahead.
Okay, so we have a 10-month-old son, and neither of us have a will in place. And so I was curious about making a will for the benefit of our child. We have spoken to the people that we would like to be guardians of our son, but, you know, it's not obviously in writing. So I was wondering if you could just give a little maybe primer on doing a will, whether we could write down our wishes and take it to a notary. And
Kaylin, where do you live?
I live in South San Francisco.
Do you? Okay, so that's San Mateo County. Here is my suggestion. This is not a question that really is appropriate in family law. It's really an estate planning question. Oh, yes, it is. And what I would suggest you do, I'm going to give you, you live in South San Francisco, I'm going to give you the telephone number for the San Mateo County Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service, if you'd like to take it down.
Okay.
And I think what you should do just to get started on this is probably call and see if you can make an appointment with an estate planning attorney for half an hour. It would only be $35 just to start to get some education in this. And the number is 650-369-4149. You might also want, at your local library in South San Francisco, you might want to go to the consumer section, NOLO.com or NOLO Press. The old name was NOLO Press. It's now NOLO.com. Has put together a couple of very good books on estate planning. You might want to at least take a look at one, or I think there are two books now that NOLO has out there. It should be in your consumer section of your local public library and look a bit, or maybe even pick one up at a bookstore. I think it's well worth it. It's under $40 to buy one. I think it would be very helpful for you and your husband to start reading and get some ideas about this, but I do think it's essential that you do see an estate planning attorney. And one of the things that you might want to do if you want, and I've given you the San Mateo County Bar Association lawyer referral number, you might also want to take a look on the Board of Legal Specialization website and see who the certified specialists in estate planning are in your area and make some calls and see who you might want to see there also. And that website is www.californiaspecialist.org. Also, the Board of Legal Specialization has a pamphlet on estate planning. So does the state bar. So I think there are many sources that you can go to and start to do some education on it.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you so much.
Okay, thanks for calling, Kaylin.
All right.
Bye-bye. Mike, welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you?
All right, how are you, Mike?
Good. I heard Jasmine say that post-nuptial agreements are not always implemented, and I wonder why that is and what's the criteria for them being implemented?
Yeah, it's not so much implemented but enforced, because it's the enforcement issue that would be the question subsequently for a court to determine. And it does get into some fairly complex analysis of whether your circumstances are such that it would be an agreement that would be enforced, depending on the particular provisions that you were trying to implement by way of post-nuptial agreement. And one of the factors that people need to consider with post-nuptial agreements is primarily the fact of the relationship, and that is why the court is less likely to enforce a postnuptial agreement than it is a prenuptial agreement. So it's not a certainty that it will not be enforceable, but it is. I'm always a little bit cautious about them, and I think that the law is still a little bit of a gray area with respect
to
postnuptial agreements.
Even if both parties go to their own separate lawyers and have them approve?
I think that's essential. I think that's a fundamental, particularly for a postnuptial agreement, to have two parties who have independent counsel. But because of that relationship, because of the fiduciary relationship that exists once people are married, there are some ambiguities in terms of enforceability.
So in my case, we're going to be selling our house and buying a new house, and I would like to get, we married, I bought my house long before I married my wife, so we're doing a postnuptial agreement where I would get the equity of the house up to the date we got married, and then after that we would split it. Do you think that's a complicated issue?
Oh, yeah. I certainly do. I certainly do. And this is Chuck, Mike. I hope you're going to go to a lawyer.
Well, exactly. I've gone to a lawyer, and my wife has gone to a lawyer.
Oh, okay.
Postnuptial agreement, and everything seems, you know, okay. But I was concerned when Jasmine said that they aren't enforceable.
You know, the only other suggestion that I might have for you, Mike, since you do have some questions about this, maybe what you might do is see if you can get another opinion, both you and your wife, another opinion from other lawyers to do this. Unfortunately, on this program, we don't have enough time to go into all of the facts, and my guests are not permitted to give specific legal advice because that's in violation of the state bar ethics rules.
Let me just say one thing, is that I want to be clear that I'm not stating that they are not enforceable, but they are more subject to challenge. So what you may want to do is discuss with your respective attorneys the types of challenges that could be mounted against a postnuptial agreement of the specific type that you're talking about.
Okay, that's great. Thank you very much.
Good luck to you, Mike.
I love your show.
Well, thank you.
You're doing a great job for San Francisco.
Well, thank you. I enjoy it tremendously. I find it very worthwhile and something that gives me a lot of pleasure. Thank you very much for calling. Let me mention to you, those of you who may be interested in learning more about identity theft, since it is such a big deal and just a prevalent problem today in our society for so many reasons, the County Law Library in San Mateo County in Redwood City has a program every month of some kind of topic that's presented at noon. On a week from tomorrow, on June 13th, the topic will be identity theft. And one of the fellows in my office, Deputy DA Peter Lynch of the San Mateo County Bar Association, San Mateo County District Attorney's office, my office, will be there to give a free lecture on identity theft, and you'll learn how and why identity theft occurs, how to protect yourself, and ways to determine if you are a victim and what to do. So it's at noon at the Law Library, which is at 710 Hamilton Street in Redwood City, right across the street from the Hall of Justice in Redwood City, and that's Thursday, June 13th at noon. You can bring your bag lunch. Enjoy yourself. It's a lovely, the library is a lovely place to be. Peter's a very good lecturer and someone who lectures to my office on new legal issues that come up. He does it quite frequently. If you'd like to learn more about this, the Law Library's number is 650-363-4913, 650-363-4913. All right, let's talk now with Lori. Lori, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
This is a great show. Thank you. I'm calling on behalf of my mother, and I'm hoping you can help me in some way. My mother is 80 years old. She lives in a county outside of Sacramento, and she's been in a very contentious marriage for about 35 years to my stepfather. She would love to get a divorce, and every time she has said she would try to get a divorce, my stepfather has said that she would never get a penny, and he would hire the best lawyer possible, and she would not get anything.
He sounds like a real bully to me.
He is a bully. He's bullied her. There's abuse on a number of levels, psychological, a little bit of physical abuse, and also financial abuse, because he keeps all the money. She's found statements, bank statements, where he has considerable amounts of money in several accounts. But they have a joint account in which she keeps the very minimum amount of money, and any time she crosses him, he threatens to take everything out of there. And she's basically surviving on her Social Security and a little bit of money. He does pay the mortgage. and buy groceries periodically. But I'm trying to figure out how to help her get out of this marriage and also to come away with her share of their joint resources, which I don't know what his complete situation is. I do know that he's working in a lucrative job and still makes considerable amounts of money.
And how old is he?
He is a year younger than she is.
So he's 70-something?
79, yeah.
79. And what is his profession?
Real estate.
Really? Oh, yeah, okay. He's a real bully, obviously. Mm-hmm. What thoughts do you have on this, Yasmin?
Well, one of the things that you might want to consider is seeing if there is an organization, a women's organization in the area that could be there to assist your mother, to give her at least some confidence to know what would happen. Mm-hmm. Because it is, if I could tell you the number of people that come in and are scared about getting divorced because they think the other side is so smart or charming or this much stronger than the other party. But the law is there to protect everybody.
Yeah.
And the community property laws are pretty clear in many circumstances. So I think it's really more a matter of getting your mother in to get somebody who can give her some advice and some support to go through this kind of process. That said, in the end, it is your mother's decision. And yeah. As much as you may want to see it happen, it is something that she will have to decide, that she has come to her own threshold with the relationship. So I think you can set it up to help her find resources where she can go. But in the end, it will be her decision whether or not she's going to do that.
Where do you live, Lori?
I live in Berkeley.
So you're some distance away.
But I do go up there, and we have seen a lawyer up there.
Oh, really?
She just needs to pay a retainer so that they can start the process. And my mom doesn't have the money. I don't have the resources exactly to help her. But
there are some lawyers who will take it on, and what they will do is they will seek fees from him or from the community property. Yeah. She may not know, and there are a lot of people who don't know in a marriage what it is that they have. But that has to be disclosed in the marriage, and it's something that she would be entitled to get attorney's fees from either the community or from him if he is still earning.
Lori, what you might do to help your mom kind of give her a boost, maybe you might want to go to the Board of Legal Specialization website. I don't know if you took it down, californiaspecialist.org. In your mother's...
I wrote down the phone number.
Yeah, californiaspecialist.org. Or if you'd like the phone number, it's 415-538-2100. Mm-hmm. And find out who some of the certified specialists in family law are in your mother's area.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can help her by calling those offices, you know, pick two or three and ask some questions and see what kind of response you get in terms of how do they go about charging when someone does not have available funds to pay a retainer, and what could your mother expect in terms of the financial obligation to the attorney, and et cetera, et cetera. But I think your mom, because she's 80, is going to really need your essential hand-holding to help her get through this.
Yeah.
Because this guy sounds to me like someone who's just bullied your mother for most of their marriage, and he's going to make it as tough as he can, even though he doesn't have legally the right to do so. So I hope you will try that.
Yes, I have, and I will continue. And I just thought I might get some information here that would help me in those efforts to move her along and get her a divorce, because she...
You know, you also might, to educate yourself, frankly, Lori, you might also contact the Alameda County Bar Association Lawyer Referral Service.
Okay.
And see if you might get a half an hour consultation with a family lawyer.
Uh-huh.
And spend $35. That's what they will charge. Yeah, and get some. Write out the questions you want to ask. Get some answers and start educating yourself so you can help your mom.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, and also NOLA has a. I don't remember the title, but NOLA. If you go to your local public library in the consumer section, there's a book that Nolo has done on getting your divorce, etc. So you might want to take a look at that and educate yourself, because your mom's going to certainly need your help. So good luck to you.
Thank you very much.
Oh,
thanks,
take
so much
care. Yeah. All right. Bye
bye.
If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. This is not just for Lori. The Bar Association of San Francisco's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. This is a public service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, and for a referral to a lawyer, you can call 415-989-1616. That's 415-989-1616. This information is brought to you by the Bar Association of San Francisco and KALW listeners like you. I already mentioned when we were talking to Kaylin, the San Mateo County Bar Association Lawyer Referral Service. If you're in another county anywhere in the state, every county has a bar association and a lawyer referral service. You can call your own during normal business hours. Tell them what the problem is. They'll do their best to find someone who's experienced in the area that you're having the difficulty with, and they'll set you up for a half an hour consultation with the attorney, nose to nose, and I'm just being facetious there. It should be face to face, actually. If you can't get into the office, they'll do their best to try to set up a telephone consultation for you for half an hour. And most communities, most lawyer referral services, depending on the county, for half an hour will either be a low of $25 or maybe a high of $35. It's an excellent service to get some basic information. Jake, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hello.
Hi.
Yes. My question has to deal with visitation rights for grandparents.
Mm-hmm. In other words, are there any rights whatsoever, huh?
Yes.
Are you a grandparent?
Yes.
And you'd like, and the parents of the child, your grandchild, won't let you see the child?
Correct. My daughter.
Why?
I have no idea. I used to see my grandson. He's 9 now, and she stopped letting him come to spend weekends and weeks with me. Approximately 2 years ago, and she's told me that she did not want to have a relationship with me. So I said, fine, but I still need to see my grandson.
Hmm.
But we haven't been able to resolve the issues to allow him to return to his old habits of visiting me, which he still wants to. Over the years, I've been trying to resolve whatever problem she has with me, but we haven't made any headway. So now I believe that I have to take legal actions because I haven't been able to reach any other solutions.
Well, let me try to get some comments for you. Jeremy, what thoughts do you have for Jake?
Jake, I know this is a very difficult emotional situation. The family code does provide, under limited circumstances, for grandparent visitation, but there was a Supreme Court case a few years back, Marriage of Troxell, that dealt with this issue, and grandparent visitation is very limited. The parents have most of the rights. This is difficult and potentially a complicated area. I would strongly encourage you to consult a family law lawyer to see if you might fall within one of the areas where you might be able to assert rights to establish visitation with your grandchild.
What are some of those areas?
Again, we can't give specific legal advice, but it depends upon your relationship with the child, whether or not the parents object to the visitation. If both parents are around and they don't want you to see the children, it may be very difficult for you to force that on them.
In my situation, the father doesn't object, but he is not with the mother.
Oh, okay. So they are separated, is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah. Does he have the right to see his child?
Yes.
I see.
He visits his father almost every weekend.
Do you have a good relationship with his father?
Yes.
Maybe you could arrange to join them for some of those visits.
Well, the problem there, that's a good idea, but the problem there is that my grandson visits his father and his mother, his grandmother, and they are a little concerned. They haven't said it, but I can feel it in their conversations that they think if they align themselves with trying to help me have visitation with my grandson, that my daughter may cease letting them see their grandchild. and his son.
Well, let me suggest something to you, actually, Jake. There are ways of finding out if you can attempt to have family mediation. And there are certainly mediators in the area of family law. Maybe there needs to be some effort on your part to try to find... Where do you live, by the way?
San Francisco.
Yeah. You might want to try to determine how to find a mediator. What comments do you have about this, Yasmin, about a mediator?
The child is in Alameda County.
Yeah, okay. Doesn't matter where the child is. But
the other thing I was thinking is it may be helpful for father and the grandparents on the other side to get some advice, because mom also can't just unilaterally stop father's rights to see the child.
Yeah.
So if that's something that they are fearful of, they should learn that what the court's going to look at is what's in the best interest of the child vis-a-vis the parents.
Yeah.
So one parent can't just unilaterally make the decision to cut the other parent's visitation off.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of grandparents, I would agree with Jeremy that it's difficult, and you are facing an uphill battle if the parent is opposed to it, although there may be a little bit of an opening in the door if father will allow it. And as to mediation, there are lots of great mediators around in the Bay Area, and so that might be something either for the whole family to get together, or for you to figure out a way to get past some of these issues with your daughter, which are causing her to distance herself and her child from you.
You know, there is an organization, and I'm sure you certainly, Yasmin, are familiar with it, called Community Boards in San Francisco. Are you familiar with it, Yasmin?
It's mental health boards?
No, Community Boards, it's called. It has existed for a long time in helping people try to resolve disputes. I think there's a major form of mediation that's involved there. Jake, write down Community Boards. That's
well,
the name.
I'm familiar with Community Boards. I used to work with them in the years past.
Oh, you did?
But as a worker there. But my question, even with Community Boards, that's here in San Francisco. I don't know whether it exists in Alameda County or not.
Well, I think the fact of the matter is you're looking for someone or some persons who might be able to help you. It doesn't matter, okay, geographically speaking, where you live or where your daughter lives, but to get together and try to see if some unbiased person or persons can try to help you and your daughter work out these problems. And that's why I suggest you might start by at least contacting Community Boards and see what suggestions they may have for you.
Okay.
Yeah. Good luck to you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Take care.
Good show.
Bye-bye. Thank you very much. All right. Do we have anybody else? Is there anybody else who we have? I guess not right now. All right. We do have a few more minutes if you'd like to call in with your question or comment. 1-415-841-4134. And by the way, in case you're interested, our next Call a Lawyer Night will be on the fourth Wednesday of the month, and that will be the 26th of June. So wherever you are listening, whether it's in the Bay Area or whether you're listening by internet radio at www.klw.org, you can join us. And that's when you can call in. It's 1-800-525-9917. While I'm doing the regular program on the air, the live call-in program, you'll be able to talk with one or more of about seven or eight attorneys who are usually here in the conference room taking your call on the 800 number. So that's going to be from 7 to 8 on Wednesday, June 22nd. And whoever sneezed, God bless you. I don't know who that was. But here's another question. My wife of 6 years does not want to... Was that you, Jeremy, sneezing?
Yeah, that was me here in Los Angeles.
Well, God bless you. You know, I haven't blessed anyone in Los Angeles for a long, long time, so it makes me feel really good. My wife of 6 years does not want to add my name to the mortgage for our home. Can you suggest any way to persuade her that it's a good idea for my name to be on the note? Well, I suppose, do either of you have any thoughts on that?
I would wonder, well, I guess, what the circumstances were with the house.
Yeah.
Who bought the house?
Who bought the
house? The house?
And who's been
What's
paying?
What's the reason for not wanting to put them on?
Here's my suggestion on that one. On the Call a Lawyer Night, June 26th, we will have someone who is a real estate attorney who will be here. And I suggest that you plan, unless this is an emergency, that you plan to call in that evening and talk with him. The other thing for you to do if you haven't seen an attorney is to actually contact the lawyer referral service for your bar association and see if you can meet with an attorney who has his or her practice in real estate law. The second question is, my wife took out student loans while she was at college before we met. Okay, so these are pre-existing loans. Am I liable for the student loans in case she defaults? Now, Yasmin's shaking her head in a no way. Is that right?
Essentially, no. It is a premarital debt. There are some limited circumstances under which a creditor could try to pursue community property, but that is a pre-existing separate property debt in most circumstances.
Yeah.
And that's also an item that, in the event of a divorce, student loans are carved out separately, and those are usually assigned to the person who took out that debt.
That's good to know. Okay. All right. Edward, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Thanks very much. Great program.
Thank you.
I'm divorced. I have two kids, 12 and 14. Considering a second marriage, my girlfriend makes significantly more income than I do, and I'm wondering how that would affect my child support. Put it.
Okay. Go ahead, Yasmin.
So in terms of child support, by statute, the income of the new spouse is not to be considered in the calculation of child support. There can be an argument that your expenses are reduced as a result of her income or her additional contributions to the household, so that the guideline child support calculation, there may be an argument that it should be varied from because of your reduced expenses as a result of her income. So you can't directly use it, but there are ways that can be an argument made that your expenses are reduced and there should be a variance from the guideline child support.
Does that give you some ideas, Edward?
A very good idea.
Okay.
Anything else I should be concerned out of in this situation?
Well, I think, Edward, with what you've got, I really think, because we don't have the time to get into it further, I really think if you have not done this, you really need to call your local bar's lawyer referral service and make an appointment to at least go in and see a lawyer who has competency and experience in dealing with this.
Thank you very much.
Be willing to spend at least $35 just to get some basic information.
It'll be well worth it.
It's well worth it. That's your best deal. It's your
Absolutely.
Best. Yeah, okay. Edward, thank you very much for calling.
Okay.
You know, I think we come actually to just about the end of the program, unfortunately. I want to thank both of you very much for joining us.
It's
been a pleasure having you here, Jeremy, via the high-tech telephone that we have.
Thank you.
You sounded like you were right in the room here, and I couldn't see you, but I could hear you.
And so, I could smell the pizza in your studio.
Thank you very much for joining us. Jeremy Klein, Chair of the Commission on Family Law of the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. His offices are in Los Angeles. And Yasmin, thank you very much for coming back.
Thank you for inviting me.
Great to see you. Yasmin Mehmet, a member of and the Legislative Chair of the Executive Committee of the Family Law Section of the State Bar. Her offices are in San Francisco. Both of them are certified specialists in family law. All right. Your Legal Rights production staff members are program engineer Joanne Marr and production assistant Martin McLean. Funding for Your Legal Rights is made possible by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar of California, the Family Law Section of the State Bar of California, the Trust and Estate Section of the State Bar, the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar, the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, the California Applicants Attorneys Association, and the San Mateo County Bar Association. Next week, we're going to be talking about the juvenile justice system. My guests will be Judge Eugene Hyman, retired, and Judge Kurt Cumley of the Santa Clara County Superior Court, Deputy District Attorney Laron Hogue-Haught of Santa Clara County, and Greg Feldman, Deputy Public Defender, San Francisco. Thanks for joining us on this program. I'm Chuck Finney. Thank you.